As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome in to the Punt Impasse podcast. I'm your host, Drew Butler, joined alongside by my co-host, Jake Fromm. Be sure to follow us on social media. We are at Punt and Pass on X and Instagram. Subscribe to the YouTube channel as well. YouTube's been popping off. We love that. YouTube.com/Punt and Pass. And of course, puntandpass.com, the number one destination for all things college football. Pleased to be back with you. We got a bunch to talk about. Georgia's baseball season is over. The U.S. Open Golf Championship wrapped up over the weekend, and the World Cup. World Cup fever has taken over the USA, and for good reason. We're going to dive all into that. We bring on a very special guest as well to kick off this show. One of the most popular episodes of this offseason series.
Don't tell him that, Drew. Don't tell him that.
It's the truth. It's the truth. Tony Losi is back with us. You remember Tony, Georgia pitcher from 2017 to 2019. He had a 20-8 record with a 3.92 ERA. He pitched 186 innings with 194 strikeouts, a third-round draft pick for the St. Louis Cardinals. He gave us the lowdown a couple of weeks ago. He was heading to Omaha to go cheer on the Dogs, and he is back. Tony, what's up, man? Jake, good to see you, brother.
Yeah, good to see you. Tony, I cannot wait to hear all about your Omaha experience. Let us know, man, how it went. Where were the cool spots? How were the Dogs? How was everything else? And then why did we get our butt whooped at was it Rocco's? What's the bar there with the jello shot?
Yeah, Rocco's.
Man, tell me about that.
Excited to be back on. Omaha was an absolute blast. I mean, I hope the Dogs get back every year because I would definitely be there. Any baseball fan should definitely go. It is all of what they say it is. It is the World Series of college baseball. I mean, it is electric. Yeah, we lost at Rocco's. I mean, we were outnumbered. That first Saturday game against Texas, all the Dog fans showed up, and I guess they all had to go back to work. So they left me out there lonely. There was, I mean, we probably went from realistically 2,000 fans to 100, not really, including parents. And it was, wow. You know, it was a huge drop off, but, you know, it is what it is. I think they had plans to show back up for the championship series, and unfortunately, we didn't make it that far.
What was the vibe like in Omaha? I mean, admittedly, I've never been there. What is downtown like? Are the hotels decent? Like, what was the situation in Omaha, Nebraska for the College World Series? I'm assuming it gets pretty active when their premier event of the summer is happening.
Yeah, I mean, it was a beautiful place. A lot of sky rises. You're right downtown. The stadium's absolutely gorgeous. No diss to Creighton, but I don't know how they lucked up and have that as their home field. I mean, that field be one of the best in Georgia. I don't know how many it held. I think like 22 or 23,000. It was packed every game. Every time the Dogs played, that game was absolutely packed with just baseball fans. I met so many people just from around Nebraska. I said, man, we come every year just because it's great. They had roads blocked off. A lot of foot traffic. Saturday, Glory. I think Friday night, Glory put on a tailgate, and then Saturday, day of the game, we had a tailgate as well for Georgia fans. I mean, that was electric. It was absolute packed. I mean, it was a sea of red and black. And that was awesome. That gets your adrenaline going. And I went to the hotel every day when the Dogs got sent off along with family and other Bulldog friends. And that was special to see, too, when the guys walked out, the cheering that went on. I mean, it gives you chills as a former player. Like, man, if these guys ain't ready to play, they're not going to be ready. You know what I mean? It was a huge pump up before every game.
All right. Before we get to the actual baseball, I got to ask you one more very important question. You said it on this podcast a couple of weeks ago. You were heading to Omaha and you were missing your wife's cousin's wedding. What's going on the home front? I know you're I know you're with your wife right now. You guys are on your summer vacation down in Fernandina Beach. Is everything okay on the home front? You got this new baby. You have another kid. I need to check in on you.
Oh, all's great. She actually flew out. I mean, she about woke me up at 9 o'clock in the morning out there in Omaha. She flew out there the next day. So she did attend the wedding and I did not. And she met me out there and we had a ball in Omaha, Nebraska.
I hear you. Both kids went.
No, both kids stayed back. Her parents kept them until Tuesday, and then my parents kept them until we got home, which was Thursday morning. I mean, the day we lost, we didn't even sleep, man. We booked our flight for 5 a.m, went back to the hotel. I was staying at the casino, gambled for 2 hours, and went straight to the airport.
I hear you, Tila. Hey, before we dive into the actual X's and O's of the Georgia baseball part, something me and you texted about that I for the life of me, still couldn't understand of the way the tournament's set up, the way it's bracketed. Sometimes Georgia would be the home team. Sometimes they wouldn't. Like, I couldn't understand that. Like, I understand if you're in the loser's bracket, how are you the home team? And, you know, if you're the higher seed, not in the loser's bracket, how are you the visiting team? I couldn't understand it. So, Tony, can you please lay that out for us?
I really don't know the official rules on it. I do know it's like it's an equal deal. So if I'm the home team the first time, well, next time we play, I'm going to be the away team. There's like no big advantage, home field advantage. I mean, if you look at Oklahoma, they were sub 500. They were nobody. I mean, they weren't even going to make the SEC tournament. And then next you know that they started together 2 or 3 good weeks. And then they got hired at the right time. And the committee thought they should be in it. And look at them now. They're national champions. Yeah. Really cool story for them. But, I mean, honestly, it's just like college football now. There's really no advantage to winning. Long as you're in, you're in, right? So long as you get in, everybody has a chance. So us being the one seed, I mean, I didn't see a huge advantage of that at all, or at least being the highest seed remaining. It was almost a disadvantage rather than an advantage.
So, Tony, yeah. I'm going to put you on the hot seat here because me and Drew have had this discussion on the podcast before on a previous episode. Like, generally, after the Super Bowl's done, there's a good consensus like, hey, the best team throughout the regular season won the Super Bowl. Or with college football, hey, generally the best team ended up winning the national championship. You know, there's probably a little bit more back and forth there with college football than necessarily the NFL. But do you feel like the best team in college baseball this year won the College World Series?
I don't. I think the hottest team at the right time won it. I mean, you look at teams. I mean, our arch rival, Georgia Tech, I mean, they were absolutely stacked from top to bottom. I mean, they should have been in the College World Series. Mississippi State, I mean, they should have been in the College World Series. I mean, you look across the board. I mean, even shout out to Mercer. I mean, those guys didn't make a regional this year, and they were number 3 in the country on home runs. They were like number 6 in the country on RPIs. I mean, they played just as good as anybody did in any Power 5 conference and didn't even make it. I mean, I'm not saying they would have won a national championship, but I'm saying those guys would have competed. They would have gave a lot of teams a run for their money. North Carolina was good. I mean, they're cursed. I think North Carolina's never won a national championship in baseball, and they've been, I think, 12 to 14 times, I heard them say on the show. I mean, crazy. It's just – and obviously I think Georgia – is a national championship team. I mean, the way our pitchers pitched out there was unbelievable. Man. We hadn't seen that all year. I mean, we flipped script, and then next thing you know, we couldn't string together a couple hits and big-time moments. I mean, we had every opportunity to win every game we lost.
It's crazy, Tony. I'm looking at these stats right now of Oklahoma, the national champions. They win the 2026 Men's College World Series. They defeat North Carolina in a 3-game set, so they are the champs. But you mentioned it. Not even a mediocre regular season. They finished with a sub 500 record in the SEC during the regular season. They lost 4 straight weekend series in the conference to finish the regular season. They lost their first game in the SEC tournament to LSU, who I think was the worst team that made the SEC tournament. Then they're staring double elimination against Georgia Tech, the number 1 ranked team in the country. They win that regional in Atlanta, and then they crush Kansas by a combined score of 21-3 in the Super Regional. They beat Alabama. They beat Georgia twice, and then they beat North Carolina. So they were certainly the hottest team at the right time. Talk about Georgia not being able to get the bats going. I know it was frustrating for a lot of Dogs fans, especially coming off that super regional, Tony, in Athens against Mississippi State, where it seemed like every single player was hitting a home run. Did the field play different? Was the wind different in Omaha? It seemed like a lot of balls that may or may not have left Foley Field got caught up right around the warning track there in Omaha.
Yeah, the wind typically blows in. Several of our games, the wind was blowing out. I mean, a lot of guys were saying during the night games that it was very hard to see, but, you know, at the end of the day, both teams have to hit with it, right? So it isn't like a favor for one and not the other. I mean, for our guys, you know, baseball is a game of runs, just like we mentioned Oklahoma making that kind of run they made this year. I mean, you can only be hot for so long. The problem is we didn't have nobody step up. So when you're top four, you rely on them. You rely on your back half to pick it up. And nobody just stepped up. And it's really hard to be great all year. I mean, our guys have been great all year. Yeah. It's like when one guy went down, another one stepped up. And, you know, it is what it is. You got to think about the emotions we're riding high. A lot of transfers, a lot of guys thinking about, hell, this could be my last at bat. This could be my last time playing baseball. You know, just a lot of uncertainty, a lot of high emotions. And just going back to what we talked about the big leaguers last time we was on the pod, I mean, those guys been here and they know how to control their emotions. That's the difference between a SEC player and a big league player, right? They're just more mature. And not to say our guys aren't, but it's just a learning curve. And, you know, I sure hope we make it back. That place is awesome.
Yeah, I really thought they were going to turn it around. Dan Jackson, I believe, the first time we played Oklahoma – hit that home run in the eighth inning. And I'm like, all right, hey, man, this is going to be, you know, the fireworks here to get everything started, turn everything around. Here's the guy, you know, our guy, he steps up in a big time moment, you know, and it was just a solo shot, but I thought it was something to get the guys rolling. That was what we needed. But man, just kind of petered out. And like, it's such the big script flip of, hey, I just feel like if we hit half as good as we did during the regular season, we win because our pitching was lights out. Like, yeah. I didn't think we could pitch that good. And man, as a fan, it's kind of tough. 'Cause you're like, man, the pitching was good enough to win. Just, man, if we could find our way to hit ourselves out of a paper sack, it would have been nice to do. But that's baseball, I mean, man.
We had two starters though, complete games.
Crazy.
Back to back, Saturday and Monday. I mean, I'm so glad we beat Texas. I don't know who the mama is, but I know Georgia's their daddy.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. There is certainly some silver lining. Georgia had an amazing season. Talk about what's next for this team. They obviously lose a lot of senior leadership, guys who have been in the program for a long time. It's being reported that Coach Wes Johnson is going to have a huge, huge contingent of top recruits in Athens this weekend for some official visits. Is Georgia baseball officially back on the map?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we've been back for a long time. You know, it's kind of like football. Jake Ross to our national championship in 17, we didn't win it, or 18, we didn't win it, and the next year we win it and 21-22, back-to-back. You know what I mean? So it's kind of one of those, once you break the curse, I think you're in. I think you're a contender for a long time. And that speaks volumes to Coach West and his staff and the culture he has brought here. He has a special model where he's going to go get kids that knows that will buy in, believe in him, and believe in each other. And, you know, he's very big on the transfer portal, which a lot of people are now. And he wants the older guy, the experienced guy, the guy that nobody took a chance on with a chip on his shoulder. And he's like, you know, come to Georgia, let's develop, and let's get back to Omaha. And it's going to be something special to see. I think Coach West will have us in a good spot for a very long time.
Yeah, obviously I hope it's next year, you know, where they get back and they're able to get back on, you know, and finish the drill. But I think it's something big and important to a culture and a program like we did in 2017 of getting there. And then all of a sudden there's belief, not only for the players, but for the coaches as well. Like, yeah. Oh, hey, we can get there. We can win. Man, the margins are very thin. But we know, hey, if we can capitalize on X, Y, and Z, we can get over the hump and get there and finally make a breakthrough. And at the end of the season, call ourselves champions. So, man, I definitely think there is some good things up ahead for Georgia baseball.
Tony, I know you're close to the program and you help and support a lot. You just mentioned Coach Wes Johnson likes to go to the transfer portal. He wants to bring guys in that will fit the culture, but who also have some experience to be immediate impact guys. What does NIL look for baseball players? I mean, what is the budget? What are these top guys making? You would hope that Dan Jackson made a boatload of money this year, but quite frankly, I would just have to assume that that's probably not the case in terms of basketball and when you compare it to football.
Yeah, it's not even close. I mean, Georgia's NIL was 10th out of 12 SEC schools this year. I mean, that's how low it is. You know, I mean, we just got a brand new stadium, which is awesome. Helps with recruits, helps with fans, helps with players' experiences. But ultimately, I mean, the way the game's going, you got to put all your money towards the on the field, all your players. I mean, you got to go pay somebody to come be a dog and, you know, and live up to that money. I mean, we really don't have the fans. So if any donors are listening, we'll take whatever we can get. You know, I've done a lot, and Jake played with me in the fundraiser. We did a baseball fundraiser this past year, and hopefully we'll come up with several other things to help this program get over the hump or go out and pay a kid that we can flip from LSU, Oklahoma, yeah. Arkansas. I mean, we just – it's just the nature of the beast, you know. And, you know, Wes knows what he's got, too, because Wes says, hey, we can't pay you all that money, but I can help you. I can develop you. And, you know, he's like, hey, this is bigger than Georgia here. Like, I can help you have a 10-year career. So it's like you go take $1 million and you come here and take 150 in a 10-year career. Which one are you going to take? You know, yeah, so I think that's a huge recruiting standpoint for him. And just like I mentioned, the last time we were one pitch away, Coach West's roster was $16,000 was his NIL from top to bottom.
Crazy.
We're crazy. 3 years ago, his first year against NC State, he had $16,000 as his NIL budget.
Man, that's nuts.
So I mean, the proof's in the pudding, right? So, I mean, he knows what he can do, and he knows how to structure this to talk to recruits. I mean, he's been at the big league level. He's been at LSU in a national championship. He's now been in College World Series with Georgia. I mean, he's building an empire himself by just using his name. Come look at my pitching lab. Come look what I did to this kid. Look how much better he got in 1 year. And I think for players and even agents helping kids now with NIL, that's a huge statement.
Yeah, it seems to be a very on brand for Georgia, a common theme when it comes to recruiting, you know, especially with football. It's like, hey, you know, we have a good NIL budget. It is not, you know, in the top 2-3% of the country as far as NIL budgets go. But, hey, we can develop. We want to get the right kids, and then we can develop you, produce you, and then send you off into whatever the professional league is, you know, whether it's football or baseball. Seems to be very on brand for Georgia. And as long as, to me, as long as the winning, as long as there's wins to back that up, I think we'll be okay in that realm. But obviously, NIL dollars only helps.
Yeah, no question about it. Lastly, Tony, before we let you go, you're from Georgia. You went to Georgia. Jake's from Georgia. He went to Georgia. I'm from Georgia. I went to Georgia. We all bleed red and black. We love the University of Georgia. Are those days just gone? Does it even matter anymore? I mean, Dan Jackson, I think he loves Georgia. Trey Phelps, I think he loves Georgia. Same for Colby Branch. But this new day and age, I think we might have lost Tony. Jake, I think this new day and age, we talk about it all the time. I just think that does not matter anymore. And it's sad, but it's the nature of the beast, man.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a Georgia-specific problem. I think it's just a college athletic problem, quite frankly, at the moment. In today's culture, there's a lot of kind of self-serving, and you have to look out for me. And I totally get it, man. It's kind of – I'm going to talk out of both sides of my mouth. It's like, hey, if you have this opportunity to go and – make some good money and increase, you know, your standing and help family and really set yourself up to have a good future. Man, I totally get it.
Yeah.
The Gunnar Stocktons of the world, they're not running around out there. You know, guys who love Georgia for what it is, love the culture, grew up being fans. Those Cinderella stories are just few and far between. It's just because of dollars. And I wish it was something other than that, but I think simplistically it just comes down to dollars, and it's starting to become a job, right? It's a job. Who's paying the most? What can, what's my best value for time put in? And quite frankly, it just doesn't matter where you're at.
No, I totally agree. Congratulations to Georgia's baseball team. An unbelievable season, record-breaking season. They make it all the way to the double elimination round of the Men's College World Series, but come up just short. And, of course, they lost to Oklahoma. Oklahoma, the national champions, they beat North Carolina. They ousted Georgia Tech, the number one ranked team in the country, in Atlanta, in the regional. So just a magical postseason run for the Sooners. Congrats to them. But, of course, congrats to the Georgia Bulldogs as well. All right, big shout out to Tony Losi for jumping on. This is our last episode for a couple of weeks. Jake and I are going to take a little summer hiatus. We've earned it. We've enjoyed doing these off-season podcasts. The SEC Media Days are coming up in a couple of weeks. I'm sure we'll have some storylines to jump back on and discuss. And then, of course, we'll ramp things up for football season. We're not going anywhere. It's the 10-year anniversary of Punt and Pass.
Let's go.
This fall, which is just incredible. So really, really looking forward to that. What else happened over the weekend? The U.S. Open was up at Shinnecock Hills. What looked to be a Father's Day snooze fest with Wyndham Clark sitting on a 6-7 shot lead on Saturday night. Didn't really think it was going to be competitive. And that changed in the first seven holes on Sunday. Wyndham Clark bogeys four of his first seven holes. Sam Burns is out there making some birdies. This thing tightened up in a big way. And wow, if you were sitting on your phone, scrolling through social media, enjoying your Father's Day, and getting a sense as to what was happening with the vibes around this tournament, boy, I have not seen a lightning rod in golf quite like Wyndham Clark in some time. This is an American playing for the U.S. Open in New York, actively getting rooted against, playing with Scottie Scheffler in the final pairing on Sunday. Scottie Scheffler going for his elusive U.S. Open to cap off his Grand Slam, Jake. And man, guys are screaming, get in the bunker.
Yo, it's Jay Uso from WWE,
and I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
Yeah. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a brand new show. It's called Money Moves. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Guys are screaming and cheering when Wyndham Clark is making bogeys and missing putts. Kind of felt uncomfortable for a little bit, but let's backtrack as to why this is happening to Wyndham Clark, okay? Last year at the PGA Championship, Wyndham Clark sends an errant drive. He turns around, chucks his driver. It snaps in half. It hits a board behind the tee box. It careens and almost hits a volunteer at Quail Hollow Club there in Charlotte. Bad look. Bad look. Heavily covered. What's going on with this guy? You can't do that. Not good. Then a month later, he goes to the U.S. Open at Oakmont Country Club in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, misses the cut. Oakmont, I think, founded in 1906, 1908. He bashes two of the lockers in their historic clubhouse. Pictures come out. This thing caught social media wildfire. It was reported that Oakmont said he's not allowed back on premises. I believe that has since been resolved, and he has done what he needed to do in order to make that situation right. Nobody like that. What's this guy's deal? Act like a professional. I can't believe you do that to a historic clubhouse. At the Masters this year, this is a little bit more like subdued, but just kind of a prickly comment to make that I think the general public doesn't really like, Jake. He's at the par three tournament. It's Wednesday. There's family running around. He's on with Scott Van Pelt on ESPN afterwards. Van Pelt asks him essentially, what's it like out there, man? A lot going on. And Wyndham's like, ton of kids. It's like active birth control. Again, funny, not exactly the time and place to say it at Augusta National. So I say all that to say, Wyndham Clark has not helped himself in a lot of ways from a public relations standpoint. And boy, the public did not like him going to chase down his second U.S. Open championship, which, of course, he did. He wins by one stroke, four under par. Sam Burns missed a ton of putts coming in, finishes one behind. But, dude, I mean, looking at what was going on social media, this was pretty remarkable, to say the least.
Yeah, a lot to talk about here, man. I feel like I was glued to this tournament. I feel like I watched every single shot that Scotty hit. Scotty definitely could have done it. You know, he went bogey, bogey start to start round three, and then like missed like 2 4-to-5 footers to finish off round three for birdies. So yeah, I feel like Scotty was there and he could have done it. Just couldn't quite make it happen. You could say Wyndham Clark also won this tournament. Yeah. On Thursday afternoon with the softer conditions. So to take you back what happened there, grounds crew, the USGA, everybody thought it was going to be crazy windy conditions on Thursday afternoon. That didn't happen. And so they were watering greens to try to slow it down to be more equal and even
between
for everybody.
Between groups. I mean, I'm talking a group gets off the green. They're coming out hand watering these greens for the next guys to hit up to, making it softer. Pins favorable in the middle of these greens because they were expecting, and at times it was gusting 40 plus miles per hour.
Yep. So Wyndham, I think he went like 4 under on the back. On the Thursday round, went like birdie, birdie, eagle there. And like basically won the tournament on Thursday, you know, and played even golf basically from there or kind of over par golf from there. So it's funny you mentioned, you know, Wyndham hasn't necessarily helped himself when it comes to these kind of this social perception of him. My wife, she was talking to me kind of about, it's like, hey, why is this guy getting so much hate? Like, you could actively hear whenever he'd hit the green and the ball was rolling off, like cheers.
Yeah.
Crazy. You know, not like, oh, not none of that. Like active.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. Like, yes, get off the green. We know we want Scotty to win this. And so my wife, I guess she did her own homework and did some digging and found the Masters comment about birth control. And it's like, yeah, it was a joke, but I just don't think it was the time and the place for that one. You know, I feel like everyone's kind of made that joke, you know, something similar before, but not at Augusta National on a Wednesday.
And time and a place, like he doesn't have the public sentiment to be able to make those types of comments, right? If Scottie Scheffler says it as a dad of two kids, that's one thing. He could say it and it just rolls off his back. But Wyndham Clark has so much heat on him. It's like, dude, it sucks to say, but at times you just got to keep your mouth shut. I thought Wyndham Clark, I want to give him a lot of credit. I mean, he was asked relentlessly about the Oakmont incident after every round. I mean, even after he won the championship, this guy has had to face the music time and time again. And I thought he showed a lot of remorse in his comments to say, hey, I've done a lot of internal work. I understand how bad of a moment that was for me. I want to move past it. I'm trying to do the right things to move past it, but unbelievable for him to overcome that adversity and win his second U.S. Open.
Yeah, so I actually feel for him on the Oakmont thing. Like, I'm not necessarily condoning the behavior by any means. Like, hey, I think he lost his emotions. I think there's a time and a place to show you, but you can't do that. Like, as soon as you cross the line and you're destroying someone else's property, like that's crossing the line. Like, you got to be able to control your emotions. But I do feel for him on the fact of, I feel like he's apologized relentlessly for this.
100 times. 1,000 times.
At a certain point, like, hey, we got to move on past this. And so, like, he doesn't have to relentlessly apologize for this. Like, I'm kind of over it. I don't want to hear it anymore.
Yeah.
Just stop asking him questions about it. Like, let's move past this. But you talk about Oklahoma getting streaky and hot. Wyndham Clark now is one of the streakiest golfers out there.
He can't miss a putt.
When he was
unbelievable.
When he is on, and he's had a couple tournaments this year, man. When he is on, like the Byron Nelson he won, like when he is on, man, he is a very dangerous golfer. He can go incredibly low. His putter was rolling. I think he made 55 foot worth of par putts. Crazy. Par putts on Saturday. So he's a streaky good golfer. I mean, he's very talented. I mean, he's a bigger guy. He's strong, and it just didn't look like there was any weakness in his game. Now, granted, you have to have Lady Luck on your side too. And just felt like whenever he missed the fairway, he like overcooked it and he ended up on the walking path.
Action.
Yeah. But he would end up on the walking path with a pretty decent lie.
Yeah, you're right.
And
living
so
clean.
He lived pretty clean throughout this tournament. So, I mean, this is a very tough tournament to win. The U.S. Open's always difficult. And it's kind of weird when you look at how the four majors are set up. You know, generally the Masters, hey, you got 10 guys that are kind of competing for this, and really nobody else has a chance.
Yeah.
PGA, I feel like, you know, the top 10 guys go on to win this one. The U.S. Open's kind of open in a sense. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of guys who win this one, and it's kind of one-offs. To win this one twice, I think, is really, really tough to do what she's done.
No question about it. I'll just say this. You know, I used to live in Arizona. Wyndham lives in Arizona. I've always heard he's a nice guy. I've never really heard a lot of bad things about it from like a personal perspective, right? Sometimes, Jake, you know, the circles that we run in, you're like, you hear things about guys and their reputation kind of precedes themselves. Not the case for Wyndham Clark. I've always heard he's a super nice guy, a dude's dude, likes to have fun, you know, very personable. So we'll give him the benefit of the doubt. Speaking of Arizona, Whisper Rock Golf Club, where Wyndham Clark is a member. Get this, Jake. Whisper Rock is home of 3 of the last 4 and 4 of the last 6 U.S. Open champions. That right there is pretty, pretty special. So shout out to Wyndham and everybody out at Whisper Rock Golf Club. You talk about the U.S. Open being tough, being a brutal setup. How about this? It was reported by Golf Channel that I think entering the final round, or maybe entering Saturday, the third round, the USGA sends out a text message to all the players warning them course conditions are about to change. We're about to turn the notch up a little bit on the greens. We're going to dry it out. We're going to get it faster. You sent this to me, and I was like, what's going on here? Okay. I don't really get this. These are golfers in a major championship. Why are you tipping them off as to what the course conditions are going to be? I love golf. You know that. Some of my close friends are tour golfers. I'll be the first one to tell them, you guys are soft, and that's coming from me, a punter. Okay, so that's not okay. I need them to deal with the consequences of a course setup, but I just found this to be interesting, especially during the U.S. Open.
Yeah, just feel like there's a lot of like optics in play. It's like the USGA and the leadership, like they had the winning score in mind, and they were trying to
like rein it back in.
Yeah, like that's what they wanted the winning score to be, like regardless. And so they either kind of took some off or added to difficulty depending on the day and the conditions. It's like, hey, just set the course up and let the weather be the weather. Hey, if it's windy and it sucks, let there be carnage. That's what what the U.S. Open is about. But you know, the watering the greens, and I get the losing the golf course, and you don't want to ruin the golf course for the next month afterwards to have the greens, you know, grow back. But I think everybody likes a little carnage when it comes to the U.S. Open. I want to see those guys struggle, man. Hey,
yeah, that's the standard.
You've been on the struggle bus before. I've been on the struggle bus, man. There's days out there when it's like, dude, I am scared. I am scared of the greens, right?
Yeah.
And the speed of the greens. And you want to see the best in the world struggle a little bit and make them feel like, you know, your amateur golfer out there at the club.
I totally, totally agree. So interesting to say the least, when I played for the Pittsburgh Steelers, obviously you're in Pittsburgh, the weather is definitely a factor. And Coach Mike Tomlin always used to say, we're not going to worry about the weather because we can't control it. Why am I going to waste my time and energy worrying about something that I can't control? And I'd put my hand up and I'd be like, well, I do need to worry about it because this is my job. I got to know which way the wind's blowing. I got to know what the weather forecast is going to be because I played a game there once, Jake. I swear to you, we had 4 seasons in one game. It snowed. It was hot. It was windy. It was raining. all in the course of four quarters. So I always do take that from Coach Tomlin, though. Can't control the weather, so why are you going to worry about it? I feel like golfers should have to deal with a little bit of
that's. That's why I got to give props to guys like Josh Allen, Ben Roethlisberger,
100%,
you know, Aaron Rodgers, Brett Beats. Favre. Man, dude, those guys that are playing outdoors up there in the north, in just the elements. Buffalo, obviously, you know, bringing in the snow, but the wind too, and the way it spins in that bowl. I mean, it is tough, and whether you think about it or not, man,
it affects you.
I just felt like Josh just made it a point early on in his career. He just said, you know what, F it, I can't control it, and I'm gonna spin this thing so hard that the wind just isn't gonna be a factor.
And he's also got like 18-inch hands too, so that certainly helps when you can completely wrap the ball in your palm and sling that thing around the wind. But no, incredible. And what was also incredible was Keith Mitchell, former Georgia Bulldog, T4, his highest finish ever in a major. He started out things rough on Thursday with a front nine 41, 6 over par on his front nine. And what does he do? He shoots a 29 on his back nine to shoot even par on Thursday. Then he shoots a 70 on Friday, even par, 70 on Saturday, even par, 70 on Sunday, even par, becoming the first ever golfer in the history of the U.S. Open to shoot four consecutive rounds of even par. Unbelievable. I'm sure he's happy. He got a fat paycheck, just under $1 million. But you got to think he's looking back at that front nine on Thursday going, man, if I would have just played okay, I might have won this thing.
Yeah, man, huge congrats to him. He had to play his way through the qualifier to even get into this tournament. Yeah. If you watched his post-game presser, you know, his post-round presser, basically said, hey, man, T4 for me here, like this is a win. Awesome. Huge congrats to him, Georgia guy, swaggiest guy on the golf course.
Cashmere Keith.
Man, and dude, I mean, to put up with what he put up, especially in the opening front nine, 41, and just battle his way back. Talk about some mental fortitude out there on the golf course, because it could get away from you real fast. I mean, he could just say, hey, I'm just happy to be here. I'm going to enjoy my 2 days. You know, I'm going to shoot a 41, and then I'm going to go shoot my 38. And then maybe, you know, shoot a 70 or 72 the next day and be out of here and enjoy the long weekend. But, man, he battled, hung around, and ended up tying with Scottie Scheffler. And then he played with Sam Burns, who was surging late, had a chance to win. You know, Sam Burns, one of the best punters of the entire world, had a chance on 17 and on 18. Man, that putt on 18 just went right there at the last minute. So Sam Burns, I hate to be Sam Burns right now because last year at Oakmont arguably should have won and had a chance this year and could have won this year as well. So, man, overall fun tournament. It wasn't the complete snooze fest on Sunday, I think, that you and I both thought. So I was glued in. I was locked in. I wanted a Scotty comeback because I thought he could have done it.
I know, man. It was fun to watch on Sunday. I'm glad it did tighten up a little bit. Shout out to Keith, though. Automatic qualifier into next year's U.S. Open. And guess what? Automatic qualifier into next year's Masters as well. So that T4 does a bunch. He's going to get a bunch of FedEx Cup points and a bunch of official World Golf Ranking points as well. So a great performance to him to kind of get his season back on track. But I know a lot of dog fans were cheering for Keith on Sunday. A great U.S. Open Travelers Championship coming up this weekend up in Connecticut. It is a signature event, so all the big names will be out there. We'll keep things posted. Royal Birkdale got
except for Rory
championship coming.
Except
Rory's
for Rory,
not playing
because the rules don't apply to Rory.
Come on, dude.
Don't
talk about my boy like that.
That's your guy. So my wife and I were watching the Netflix Swing series from last year. Took us a while to kind of get around to it. We were in the middle of the show, but I'm so off the Rory train, dude. Like so off of it.
Hey, have you guys watched Off Campus on Amazon?
No, what's up?
Okay, so Jackie and I just finished it. One season, 8 episodes, and it's a good show. The ladies love it for obvious reasons, Jake. So if you wanna have a little fun, watch it.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. It was 8 episodes, like a hockey player and a girl, and they fall in love, and there's like a love triangle, and then there's a lot of other guys and girls, and it's an intimate show. Let's put it that way. A very intimate show.
Is it overly raunchy?
I think it's just the right amount of raunchy. That's what I would say. I enjoyed it. So I know Jackie enjoyed it. We just finished that up. We watched it in about three nights. So when you find one of those shows, there's only eight episodes. You jump in. Yeah. Another really good show. I don't know if you watch it. It's on Apple TV. It's called Your Friends and Neighbors with John Hamm, Olivia Munn. Oh, that show.
I'm a John Hamm fan.
Okay. Yeah. You and Caroline would love this show. Your Friends and Neighbors on Apple TV. The second season just finished. I promise you. It is a very solid show. I thought season two was awesome. Put that on your radar as well.
Okay. I will do that. Well, Caroline and I, we just finished Peaky Blinders. Yes, we're late.
That's good. My dad really
liked Peaky Blinders. I tell you, man, the first like four seasons of Peaky Blinders, fantastic. And then the storyline just kind of gets off the rails. And then the movie, it's like, I felt like we set so much up in the two seasons before the movie. And it's like we didn't even circle back to whatever the main plot was during these seasons.
Yeah, it's tough.
So it's kind of
they lost the plot.
It lost it. And so I don't know. But man, the first four seasons of Peaky is fantastic.
All right. How about what else has been fantastic is the World Cup here in America. Team USA already winners of Group D. Thursday night's game against Turkey does not matter. They are in the knockout stage. Incredible two performances. They beat Paraguay 4-1. They turn around, they beat Australia 2-0. And their pathway to a potential semifinal or World Cup championship game is extremely favorable, Jake. I don't know if you've seen these scenarios posted all over social media, but if it were to be played today, I believe their round of 32 game would be against Bosnia, in which the USA would be favored. And then after that game in the round of 16, it would be against Egypt, in which they would be favored. And there is a potential. I saw this as well. Now, again, there's a lot that can happen here. There is a potential for the USA to play England in a knockout game on the 4th of July in Philadelphia.
That's sick.
Which would be so sick. America 250. That would be absolutely unbelievable. But, man, the World Cup has been so fun to watch. These cities are on fire. All of these international fans coming over and integrating themselves into American culture has been great. It's been so fun to watch. But here's the best part. Yesterday, we're filming this on a Tuesday. Yesterday, Argentina plays with Lionel Messi, two goals. France plays with Kylian Mbappe, two goals. Norway plays with Erling Haaland, two goals. I mean, those are three of the top five international soccer stars of all time. All time might be a stretch right now, certainly. And they're in America playing in the biggest games, doing their best. It's so fun to watch. I've really enjoyed it. USA plays Turkey at 10 p.m. on Thursday night.
Yeah, like you said, it seems like the best players are kind of playing their best, which makes it, you know, makes it as a kind of a fringe fan even more kind of fun to watch and pay attention to. Because, like, man, you want to watch the Scottie Schefflers, you know, or the Josh Allens, like whoever's supposed to be the best at the sport, like come in and play well and play their best. We were talking about it at the neighborhood pool yesterday, and my neighbor was like, USA, the team, they've scored more goals in the group stage in two games than they have scored like all time since like 1932. Like that is crazy. So
yeah,
our team apparently pretty stout this year. Egypt and Bosnia, I mean, I don't know soccer a whole lot, but I would imagine would, you know, be a very favorable matchup. And then to play England there on the 4th of July,
that would be sick.
Come on.
That would be sick.
The storylines on that game, like make it happen. We got to, I mean, that would be awesome. It'd be
epic. I think unfortunately, because they're coming out of Group D, even if they were to make it to the semifinal, that would not be the Atlanta game. So unfortunately, I don't think USA has any chance of coming to play in Atlanta, but I know we're about to wrap this up. One of my favorite things coming out of the World Cup has just been seeing all these videos on social media of these international fans experiencing American culture and just having their minds blown. Walmart, Costco, Buc-ee's. The Australian guy who goes to Texas Roadhouse and thinks it's the most amazing restaurant in the world. He's like, they bring me out this bread. I say, I didn't order the bread. They say, no, it's free bread. You can have as much as you want. He's like, this is incredible. I get free refills. Steak's only $10. I'm like, dude, He goes, why are Americans so angry? You should be happy all the time. You live in a country that has Texas Roadhouse.
It's hilarious. Real quick. So apparently Freddie, the German guy, you know, who we think is a complete conspiracy. So I texted a confidant of mine who is very tight in the Ella Langley camp. Anyway, apparently he is a real dude, a real person. I'm just not buying the social media buy-in. Something's up here. But
something's up, dude. There's no doubt.
He is a real person. He is a real person. But nothing about this screams authentic and organic to me.
No, and to your point, last week we talked about it. He had gained 600,000 plus followers in a week. Since then, he's up to 731,000 followers. So now it's tamed down a little bit. He's up 100,000 followers, but you know, he's going to Boston, and who tweets at him? Gordon Ramsay, the famous chef. The tweet is like, hey, if you're going to Boston, let me know. I got something special for you. People are offering him private jets. It's absolutely crazy. But hey, he's winning the World Cup. So shout out to him, and shout out to Ella Langley's tour manager for giving us some insight that this guy is for real. So thank you very much, man. This has been a great episode. Shout out to Tony Losey for jumping on. Thank you for watching on YouTube, listening on podcasts, or watching on Atlanta News First here in Atlanta. We're going to take a little bit of a break. Hope everybody has an awesome 4th of July. Follow us on social media at Punt and Pass on X and Instagram. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Follow us at Drew Butler, at From Jake. Have a great week, everybody, and we will talk to you in a few weeks. See you.
We out.